Hello, welcome to another episode of the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. My name is Ali Mwakaneno Gakweli, your usual host. So this segment is the CEO chat segment in partnership with the Kenya Bankers Association. And today we want to talk to David Mukaro, who is the CEO of Caritas Microfinance Bank. David was earlier talking about the strategies of enhancing SME and household access to credit. And we want to continue with that conversation. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you very much, Ali. And thank you for inviting me here. Really pleased to talk about the microfinance segment.
Always welcome. So just to start right on, from where you sit, how can small and micro enterprises position themselves to better access credit from microfinance banks? And this is specifically looking at SMEs without collateral.
Let me start by saying that micro small enterprises in Kenya are very significant in terms of contribution to employment of our youth, in terms of contribution to our GDP, the micro and small and medium enterprises are extremely important. To just put it into perspective, we have about 10 million micro, small, and medium enterprises. 8.5 million of those enterprises are what we consider as informal enterprises. They are not registered. They have no license. They are your usual small, really micro businesses. You know, Mamboga there. Green grocer outside a shop, a small retailer on the ground. There are quite a number, 8.5 million out of the 10 million. And it's for the microfinance bank now to really look at that as a challenge because a country will never develop with that kind of informality of conducting business. For us to develop this country, we must be able to ensure that as many as possible of our micro enterprises get into a more formalized structure, because at that level now, they are more recognizable. They have a bank account. They have a license, so they are contributing to the GDP and the revenues of this country. They can be seen. They can be felt. And they also start feeling that they are part and parcel of the business fraternity in this country. So 8.5 million, a whole 84%, is very significant. What we consider as a formal microfinance institution are about 14%. That's about 1.4 million in this country. So the 1.4 million businesses now need to really start focusing on product development. They need to start focusing on expanding their businesses. If they are based in the rural areas, they need to now start focusing on value addition in terms of really positioning themselves for the microfinance banks in this country. Yeah, at a small enterprise level, where we have a small, very, very small percentage of our businesses are what you consider as small. And that's about 1.1%. These are about 111,000 businesses are what you consider as small, employing about 10 to 49 people. At that level now, these are businesses that have identified an opportunity, and they're probably now focusing on that opportunity, building the marketing structure around that opportunity, and really adding a lot of value along that opportunity. So for MSMEs to really position themselves better to the microfinance banks, it's for them really to look at themselves internally and start focusing on being very good in specific areas of business and really growing that business, keeping records, opening a bank account and start transacting in that bank account, start building a relationship, attend trainings. Now, trainings online on how to do business are quite a number. And really get into business clubs, be members of business clubs, form what we call business networks, because your network is what you consider as your net worth. If you do not have a network, your net worth from the marketing perspective is very limited. So I really want to urge the micro, small, and medium enterprises to really focus on those key areas and also develop strong financial management skills. They don't have to be CPAKs, but they just need to attend the basic financial literacy programs. You know, how do I borrow? How do I save? What kind of savings product is good for me? Where do I invest with my when I invest? Right. How do I differentiate between a good loan and a bad loan? So you find that there are those basic things that the MSMEs should be able to start getting into practice. And for sure, their businesses will grow. And for sure, they'll be very, very attractive to the microfinance banking sector.
You know, you've raised some really, really powerful points with regards to some of the tools that would allow banks especially to make it easier to lend to small businesses, including the data gap, which is something that I'd gladly talk about as the interview proceeds. Something that came up in the conversation, of course, was the different types of small businesses. And maybe I'd like us to draw a distinction. What are some of the characteristics of SMEs and how do we differentiate them from small business enterprises?
Ali, I can tell you there's been a very big debate, not just here in Kenya, but across the world, on how do you differentiate the micro, the small, and the medium enterprises. And the reason is because every country is unique. Every region is actually unique. And how do you categorize businesses? You'll have to use so many indicators for you to really say, this business is in this category. However, the Kenya government, through its various authorities on the ground, have been able to clearly differentiate what we call the MSMEs on the ground. And MSME now, the first M standing for micro, then small enterprises and medium enterprises. I've just mentioned them slightly. But the main differentiator is on the basis of employment. And that is what the Kenya government has actually been using. That at the informal level, what we call the informal micro level, the unregistered, the informal micro enterprises, you find that they hardly employ anybody. So it's the owner who is running with that business. So in terms of employment, even the 8.5 million businesses I mentioned that under informal micro enterprises, they actually don't have employees. And if they do, probably it's the son or the daughter who is left in the shop or who is left running the business concern. So they actually, and those are temporary measures. Mostly it's the owner who is the manager at the same time. The formal micro enterprises are considered those which employ between one and nine people. And that's how they actually differentiated, with a turnover of about 500,000. And the Micro and Small Enterprise Act is very clear on that. Many people will argue and say, oh, that's, that threshold is very low. But remember that this definition has taken into account the level of informality in this country and has tried to really look at how do we categorize these micro enterprises without leaving out the informal sector. So the formal micro enterprises, 1 to 9 employees, and they have a turnover of less than 500,000. What we consider as the small enterprises in this country, their turnover is above 500,000 up to about 5 million. And they employ about 10 to 49 employees. So you find this a small industry, it's probably a small concern, a firm that employs X number of laborers and technical staff. That's where they fall, a packaging structure, a warehouse that is doing quite an amount of work in, at the industrial area. So those are what you consider as small enterprises. In terms of medium enterprises, you'll find that the medium enterprises will employ between 50 and 99 employees. So labor as a measure of size of business has been used by the Kenya government very strongly. And the secondary part, the secondary definition has been the turnover. But there are many ways you can actually be able to categorize these institutions. You can use technology. how technology investments are. You can use the amount of fixed assets. There are many different ways you can be able to differentiate the micro, small, and medium enterprises, including the large and the regional businesses. But the Kenya government has been very, very categorical in terms of defining them in that way. That way, they're able now to focus the kind of support that the microfinance banks can be able to give. And I usually say the microfinance banks should be able to focus on the 8.5 million informal micro enterprises and the micro enterprises who are about 1.4 million and to a large extent, the small enterprises. And I usually tell people to visualize and picture. What if we grow our 8.5 million informal micro enterprises to what we consider as small enterprises? That will be a transformational strategy that, if it is executed, we'll be able to change this country forever.
You know, I'm happy you actually talked about the secondary sort of demarcations that differentiate between small businesses, micro enterprises, and medium enterprises. And I'd like to focus on the turnover here. Just merging your first answer and your second answer, one of the challenges that there is the data gap in terms of formalizing the finances of small businesses, if you will. You know, proper record keeping when it comes to sales, the line between finances belonging to the business and finances belonging to the family, especially when it comes to small businesses. And, you know, with other uncertainties like the COVID-19 have made lending to SMEs very, very high risk. What are some of the measures that microfinance institutions have taken to protect themselves from the informal nature, rather risks that emanate from the informal nature of MSMEs, as well as other emerging trends like the COVID-19?
The reason microfinance institutions and microfinance banks in this country established themselves and were allowed to establish was to target what we used to call the informal sector, and with a view of growing that that informal sector. So since early 1990s, the microfinance institutions and microfinance banks have developed tools to be able to manage the risks involved in this kind of segment. Tool number one was putting the entrepreneurs in smaller groups and training them, you know, walking them through some basic business training to ensure that they're able to start and manage their own businesses. Training reduces risks significantly. Business training, financial education training reduces business risks effectively. Why? Because entrepreneurs are able to make financial decisions based on the training they have actually received. Many businesses fall or collapse or die because of wrong decisions that they are actually making. And these are wrong financial decisions and wrong business decisions. So to train our entrepreneurs to make the right decisions has been one of the highest risk mitigants that the microfinance banks have used. Putting people in groups and also now using what we call social collateral. You do not have what we call a collateral. You don't have a piece of land that has a title deed, which is what majority of the lenders were actually using at a certain time. So we developed alternative collateral, which was a group that of people that know you, people who will say, I know David Mokaru, I know where he stays, I know the kind of business he has, I know his grandfather, great-grandmother, I know this person, and I can be able to vouch that he is a person of good standing in the society. So social collateral was the other aspect that we've been using to manage our risks. The third risk management strategy we've been using is appraisal. And remember, we are appraising in an informal and a micro enterprise segment, where record keeping is not as good as it should be. So we have developed specific skills and tooled our officers to be able to construct and make sense out of the financial information they get from our entrepreneurs. And we've been able to make pretty good decisions around that, and just making sure that our clients are able to pay, and the loans they borrow will not affect them in a negative way. So appraisal of to just show ability and to see where the cash is, and using that cash flow into their bank account as a collateral that will enable them to get a loan facility from the banks. The fifth mitigation strategy has been to encourage our MSMEs not to over-rely on borrowings, that they can actually also start saving. Yeah, they can save and they can utilize their saving to grow their businesses, because business take time to grow. So as businesses grow, we also now give them facilities, enable them to access deposit or savings facilities that will now ensure that they keep some money aside as they trade on a daily basis. They keep some money aside that they can be able to use to grow their future business. That way, they actually also manage the risks, the internal risks, at the same time. So we have various ways that we've been using. Definitely, we also have policies that guide these institutions, that tell us what it is we can be able to do and what is it that we cannot be able to do. For instance, we need to manage the risks or the environmental risks. There are businesses that we cannot be able to fund because they harm the environment. You know, growing of cannabis sativa, running a brothel, you find that there are those internal risks mitigation strategies that the banks, the microfinance banks also have, because we do not want to encourage businesses that will harm the environment. You know, burning charcoal, cutting down of trees without license. There are those type of businesses that we actually consider as high risks because they harm the environment, and we have to be one with the environment.
David, when you started answering this question, one of the things that you mentioned was that part of the original mandate of microfinance banks was partner with SMEs. And just building upon what you said with regards to appraisal as being one of the key mitigations towards solving the information gap, or rather the data gap that we have among small businesses, what are some of the other challenges, in the sector? Because in as much as we have such measures in place, the uptake of products from microfinance and the public awareness, I'm sure we could agree, could do better. What are some of the challenges encountered when it comes to lending to SMEs? And what solutions would you suggest?
I want to think that, and which is what I have seen on the ground, as one of the biggest challenge in lending to SMEs. First and foremost is the SMEs themselves. They need to believe in what they do, and they need to do it with a passion. They need to focus on that business and be able to do it with passion and be able to grow it. Many times you'll find that an SME will approach you. They want to borrow, but part of our appraisal is to just ask how that business is, how the last 10 years you've been in that business, how is it doing? And we expect the SME to really, really come out very, very passionately and be able to talk about the business that they're actually doing. Majority of the people you'll find are in business probably because there is nothing else. They're not employed, you know? So it's like you are there to survive. Just past that particular day, survive. So you borrow small amounts of money. So in terms of planning, to just be able to say what I want to say, majority of the small, medium enterprises will not come to you with a concrete plan. You know, a concrete plan, something that they've really thought about, that this is what I actually want to do. This is where I want to take my business. And there are very few. And the ones that actually are able to articulate their plans, articulate what they really need to do, articulate the challenges they are going through and how they are going to address those challenges, articulate the amount of money that they actually want to borrow and why, and the purpose and what the outcome they expect out of that borrowing is, the ones that come in that format, we are able to serve them very, very fast. Majority are the ones that will come, they want a loan, but when you probe and you want to find out exactly why that amount and not this amount, do they have a plan around that amount? So you find that we really, really need to focus our businesses on planning first before they come to borrow. You know, even if it's a simple plan, just understanding you have a current business and what you want to do. A simple plan that you're able to articulate to your banker and your banker is able to understand it. The second thing is how the source of payment, how will you pay this loan? You know, and that's also speaking to the plan, because if you really, really have a good plan, you'll also ask yourself, how will I pay this loan? So you find that in terms of the understanding the business and putting it into perspective that the bankers will be able to appreciate is a significant challenge. Definitely, there are issues to do with the government. There are issues to do with policies around majority of the partnerships we have. And there are issues to do with the cost of funds that microfinance banks also access, which ends up into making our loans very, very expensive. There are issues to do with the environment itself in terms of non-performing loans. When you look at this country over the period, the non-performing loans have been increasing significantly. And this is a significant challenge that we face. And when you look at even the CRB reports that we are actually getting, we now have quite a number of people listed in there having been unable to pay. And one of the main reasons, particularly 2020 and 2021, has been the COVID-19 pandemic. And the COVID-19 pandemic has really affected most of the businesses in terms of the market itself, moving goods from one point to another, the locking that we've experienced over the period, shut down the service industry. You can see the unemployment has shot up and the insecurity has increased. So even the micro entrepreneurs are also losing their goods in terms of the business they have established. So you find that there are significant challenges around businesses right now. But as microfinance banks, our role now is to bring back those businesses back into the economy, develop their resilience to manage this kind of pandemics, this kind of shocks going forward. And what we have done is most of our micro entrepreneurs, we give them moratorium periods. Yeah, we restructured their facilities. We've trained them more. We've reduced some of the rates. We reduced some of the cost for our business people. And we will continue doing that. We are refinancing. Majority of our clients have also lost their working capital because of the time it took for the economy to bounce back. So you find that we are refinancing most of those businesses as we go to just be able to address the challenges they're actually facing.
Away from the different mitigations which microfinance institutions are taking just to improve lending towards small businesses especially, where is the place of customer experience and automation in driving the whole agenda of improving access to credit for both households and small businesses?
I can tell you, Ali, the two are interlinked and are very critical. And I would say they are actually the cornerstone of what we are actually doing. First and foremost is customer experience, customer focus. We need to focus on the right people. The micro, both formal and informal, small and medium enterprises. These are the engines of transformation of this country. So in terms of really ensuring that they are up and running, our mandate as microfinance institutions is to ensure that they access financial services, the four levels financial services, deposits or savings. Secondly, in terms of transactions, how do we make them transact better in a faster way, in a better way? How do we ensure that they transact from where they are How do we ensure that we reduce the cost of transaction to them? Thirdly, is the issue of bank assurance. As they grow their wealth, how do we ensure that we protect the wealth that they have actually created? And lastly, the last item is, how do we ensure that they have access to loans in terms of growing their businesses? So in terms of ensuring that they access the four types of financial services, that is what I would call customer experience. If you are able to access, if you are able to get all that in a city, in a financial institution, in a microfinance bank, then, and you access it in a way that it's not expensive for you, you access it through a platform that you can be able to utilize from where you are, or you access it through official bank officer that are smiling and that are readily available to respond to your queries, then that is truly customer experience. Because customer experience is how you make your customers feel, how you make the MSME feel. Do you make them feel that what they are doing is very, very important and they need to do more of it? Do you make them feel that they are part and parcel of an ecosystem in a country, that the micro informal segment is as important as the large enterprises in this country? Do we make them feel like that? That is what customer service is all about. And we must ensure that when we are dealing with the micro entrepreneurs, be they formalized or informal, they must experience positive customer experience. And automation plays a key role, that they are so busy really focusing on their businesses, waking up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. to go to Nyamakema market, come back again and sell their wares all the way up to 9 o'clock. They have no time to go to the bank. So the structure that we build around them through automation should be able to enable them to continue doing their businesses, growing their businesses, but at the same time accessing financial services. So that the strategies around those two components are very critical for the microfinance banks in this country. And that is what we do, and that is our mandate. We will continue doing that and ensuring that our customers are able to have that positive customer experience and are also able to, using automation processes and everything else, are able to get financial services just like any other Kenyan out there.
Last question as we wrap the interview, of course, David. Earlier you talked about data and information in general. What do you think is the role of big data in the formulation and implementation of the formalization of rural economies in Kenya?
Big data is everything. Going forward, we are not just going forward, even historically, data has been used to be able to make significant decisions. The concept of big data that has been used recently clearly says that in the rural economy, there is data all over. But how do we now ensure that we put that data, we convert that data and make sense out of it? And that now is the principle of big data and what it is that we need to do with it. And value chain partnerships is a critical component. That if we are talking about, for instance, avocado as a value chain, that we need to know the farmer on the ground. How many avocado trees do they have? When were they planted? What type of avocado species do they have on the ground? When are they like to start being harvested? What challenges are they going through? What kind of pests is attacking the avocado tree? That is data that is sitting somewhere, and somebody actually has it. An agronomist on the ground has it. So how do I use it as a banker to be able to make a financial decision? That is what big data is all about. That the buyer who buys and delivers them to Kakuzi also have significant data on the number of customers in a certain given location who are growing X number of trees of avocado. That, what we call broker in Kenya, has a lot of data. Who is putting that data together? Who is using that data that is being housed by our good broker on the ground? Then at Kakuzi, there is the data they actually receive. How much good avocado do they receive? How much do they throw away? What quality of avocado is coming from X place? how many categories of avocado are being grown in Kenya. That information and many other information is all over. So what I am saying is that big data is critical. And the sooner we put it together and we start harnessing it, we will be able to make the right decisions all the way to the country level, how much export we can be able to do in X number of years, so that when we approach China with its huge appetite of avocado, we can be clear that we actually are sure of how much avocado we have in this country. And us as bankers, we can be sure of how much land is on the ground, and we can be able to facilitate and finance our farmers to be able to increase the number of avocado trees. And avocado is just an example I have given. Just wanted to talk about what big data can be able to tell us as bankers, tell us as exporters, tell us as importers. So the importance of big data cannot be underestimated. And this is an area that our youth need to really, really come in and play into and be able to look at the value chains and see how they can be able to bring together all that data for it now to be consumed by the various players. So formulation and implementation of those strategies will be seamless if we are able to harness the power of big data in this country. The Minister for ICT, these are issues that I know they've been tackling with the various players in the industry. And we can say from a microfinance perspective, this is data that we'll definitely need and we continuously use going forward.
Thank you so much for answering that, David. I think that is all I had for today. Thank you so much for creating time to have this conversation. To our listeners, that was David Mukaru, the CEO of Caritas Microfinance Bank. And David was earlier live on the CEO chat hosted by the Kenya Bankers Association. If you want to catch up with more CEOs of more banks in Kenya holding conversations on that platform, feel free to join chat.kba.co.ke, where you will find more CEOs talking about how to support specifically small businesses during this era of COVID-19. Thank you so much for joining this call, David, and see you next time.
Thank you very much, Ali, and all the best. And thank you for inviting me. I just want to appreciate everybody who has been listening into this and encourage everybody to get into a small business, grow it very, very well. The economy and the future of this country lies in your hands. Thank you very much.